This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is another podcast from Worldwide Wave, the international LGBTI news and current affairs show. Every week on Australia's first LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community. This is the Worldwide Wave.
Good evening and welcome. This is Worldwide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show, especially for the LGBTI community. We take you around the globe one country at a time. Tonight in the studio, welcome back, Sarah.
Hello.
Great to have you back. Tom is here as well.
How you going?
G'day, Damien.
Hello.
And my name is Matt. Now, for people living in a war zone, survival is the most basic human response. But sometimes other human emotions come into play at the most unlikely times and places. And tonight we bring you a true-life gay love story from war-ravaged Iraq.
Aww.
What were the risks of altering words of love for the very first time?
How did these two young men manage to hide their romance from the soldiers and the family that were always around them?
What was the highlight of their terrible experience? The answer will surprise you. Slinging Cupid's arrow amongst the bombs and bullets with us tonight is Chris McKim, co-director of the documentary Out of Iraq, showing in this year's Melbourne Queer Film Festival. Here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
There was an American soldier that's Nayef who was working under, who would kind of help them find time to see each other and, you know, have little secret rendezvous and stuff. But, you know, I think the bigger problem was just being concerned about each other's safety. It, you know, they were going out on missions together and separately, and between snipers and IEDs and, you know, anything could go wrong. And any time they were separated, very possibly could have been the last time they saw each other.
Hi, I am Tim.
And I'm Ben.
From Hello Melbourne.
And you are listening to the Worldwide Wave
on Joy 94.9.
Tonight we're talking all about love.
Love in a world war place. Love in
war-torn country?
War-torn country. Messages coming in already. Thanks, 317. Coopers with their PR marketing failure. Bibles, beers and politics just don't really mix, especially in rainbow glasses. Did you catch this one? The Coopers reportedly sponsoring a Bible group for a chat about a chat against marriage equality, a chat for traditional values. It's gone viral, of course.
That sounds like a very strange mix, religion, alcohol and LGBTI.
It is indeed. It's clearly a dangerous mix. There's a boycott going on of Coopers around certainly gay venues in town. Hoffler's also got an opinion on that one. There's SBS has run a spoof video of this already, which he says is hilarious. It's a constant fail for Tim Wilson. Religion, politics and beer don't mix. Common themes there.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your Fun Fast Facts.
So we are bringing you some good news tonight that has come out of Iraq, but sadly, it is not all good news. So LGBT...
We do try.
We do try. We look very hard. LGBT rights in Iraq have never, I guess, been a priority, but there have been some changes. So there was a ban on homosexuality when Iraq was under British rule. So that's in the sodomy laws.
In their defence, it's not their fault.
Well, yes, I guess so. You could look at it that way. They have the ability to change. It was maintained when they achieved independence in 1932. And it was then there were, I guess, extensions to this enacted in 1969 where they made some changes. So criminalisation of sexual behaviour was classified only if it was to do with incest, adultery, rape, prostitution, public acts, things like that. So there was a kind of a loosening up in the 60s. Of course, it all came crashing down later when laws were reenacted under Saddam Hussein's regime.
But interestingly enough, that wasn't till 1988. So while most of the world had sort of slowly progressed towards LGBTI rights, they were doing, you know, they started off with the Brits not so great, then they relaxed a little, and then under Saddam Hussein in 88, they went back the other way. So it's been a bit of a to-ing and fro-ing.
Indeed, and even though there was this kind of, there was a loosening up of the laws, but then there are all these sub-things that the police could draw from to still criminalise any activity that they really didn't like. So, you know, if you were getting together in a group to do something which they deemed subversive, you could be hauled into jail. There were various things about producing or importing pictures or written material, you know, quite broad rules which could be enacted by the police in persecuting LGBT people.
And in 2001, they actually passed the death penalty for adultery or and prostitution. So, gee, they got pretty hard pretty quick.
Of course, in the military, there is a rule which prohibits anybody from engaging in homosexual sodomy. There has been some bright news. There is the seeds of queer activism coming through. There is a group called Iraqueer, I-R-A-Q-U-E-E-R, who have a website and aiming to raise awareness about LGBTI people within Iraq and the Kurdistan regions.
And promisingly, a prominent Iraqi cleric has also broken the silence and condemned violence against the LGBTI community.
This is Dede Utomo from Kaya Nusantara in Surabaya, Indonesia, speaking on World Wide Web.
We are in Iraq tonight, and drama and romance are two of the great staples in terms of themes in movies. And wartime love stories are not new either. But the documentary Out of Iraq has one unique difference. We asked its co-director, Chris McKim, is this perhaps the first same-sex wartime love story to reach our screens?
As a story being told, I mean, it's the first I've seen. You know, I'm sure it's by no means the first time two gentlemen fell in love during wartime. But, you know, it's not a story that I've seen told, for sure.
It's, of course, set in Iraq during the Iraq War. Paint us a bit of a picture of how challenging it would be to have a relationship in both a war-torn environment but also a same-sex relationship when it is just not accepted in that country.
You know, Naif and Batum knew each other for months before they even dared to tell the other person about the feelings they were starting to have for him. You know, if they had told one another about their feelings and the other person wasn't gay, not only, you know, it's more than just embarrassment or, you know, talking to someone who's not interested in you. It's punishable by death. You know, the other person could have attacked them, which is very realistic and happens all the time. You know, so it was quite dangerous. And, you know, just that they had to build up to that certain level of trust. It's only gotten worse since the war. The war actually, I think, gave them an opportunity to be living in close quarters and have a freedom to get to know each other because they were working with, you know, the Americans. And on the American base, it was a little less fearful than it may have been sort of without that bubble. But, you know, it is quite dangerous and is to this day.
That was Chris McKim, co-director of the documentary Out of Iraq, explaining the many obstacles to same-sex love in war-torn Iraq. Coming up, Chris tells us how Niyef and B2 were able to keep their love hidden. You're on the World Wide Wave.
Joy, 94.9.
This is Hussein Alizadeh covering the Middle East for the International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission on the World Wide Wave.
We're talking love in a battlefield in Iraq. Messages coming in again. 317 says, in the last hour, Coopers has issued a press release with their founders saying that they support marriage equality. Too little, too late, do you think?
Sounds like they've been drinking a bit of their produce, I think.
Indeed, indeed. Let us know. Are you going to join the Coopers boycott? I did actually see on Facebook a number of pubs, including one up, one of the gay pubs up Northside, who were visibly pouring out their Coopers and throwing the bottles in a bin, smashing them. So,
Now back to our story of love, where Chris has been telling us of the need for intense secrecy of their love affair between two Iraqi soldiers, Niyef and Batu, we ask Chris how they managed to hide their romance.
Well, they just had to be extremely cautious when they were, they spent a great deal of their time working together in Ramadi, and they both lived on the U.S. base. There were some Americans who knew, about their relationship and didn't have so much of an issue. But, the big concern were the other Iraqis who need the other soldiers, some of the other translators who would have had an issue with it. So they just had to be really cautious. They did end up they would have time off, and they would travel together. They would go, Baghdad was a little safer. It's a bigger cosmopolitan place. They can kind of, hide in the crowds. It was just, really being cautious and I think relying on the kindness of the few people who did know who were able to help them, sort of see each other and have a relationship. There was an American soldier Nayef, who was working under, who would kind of help them find time to see each other and, have little secret rendezvous and stuff. But, I think the bigger problem was just being concerned about each other's safety. They were going out on missions together and separately, and between snipers and IEDs and, anything could go wrong. And any time they were separated, very possibly could have been the last time they saw each other.
Tell us about the first kiss. There's quite a little story about the first kiss.
Yes. Well, that was really where, the first kiss came after they had known each other for months. And it was this thing of not confiding in each other. Nayef, being a translator, was kind of popular among the Iraqi soldiers because they wanted to know what the Americans were thinking and what they were like. And, from a sort of first-hand experience. And so when they were off, they were off on this mission, he just kind of thought, Batu's interest was the same as the other soldiers, even though he had feelings for him. Meanwhile, Batu was also kind of working up to try to tell Nayef about his own feelings for him. And, once they did sort of take that leap, with Batu sort of first saying the words, that led to their first kiss and what was, like a 10-year relationship and commitment to each other and, all the work that went into trying to get each other out of Iraq and a life together.
So tell us a bit about that process of getting out, because it wasn't easy, or it was slightly easier for Nayef with his American context. But what happened with Batu?
Well, Batu, as you said, Nayef being a translator, he was one of the first translators who was able to get a special visa because he worked with the U.S. military, was able to get out. Batu got there because, Nayef first came over, he kind of assumed, well, it'll be easy. Once I get over there, I'll be able to bring him over. But it wasn't his husband. It wasn't, a relative. And so there wasn't a whole lot he could do for Batu. And so they just kept communicating, via Skype, and they kept in touch. And meanwhile, Batu's applying for visas and stuff, getting turned down. And so eventually his family kind of figures out that he's having, or they suspect that he's having this relationship with Nayef, and, things suddenly become a little dangerous for him. He's worried that, honor killings are a big thing, especially in his particular community. They were quite religious, and, he had to get out, and he ended up in Beirut on a 30-day visa. He could do that as an Iraqi. He timed it with, some of his time off as a soldier, but basically went AWOL and then was stuck in Beirut for several years as he tried to get refugee status through UNHCR. And then, I don't want to give it all away, but, eventually they, with the help of an American, Michael Fela, who Nayef had met in Seattle, they eventually kind of made their way through the system, but it took many, many years.
And they are now living in the US. How have they transitioned to a life of red carpets at film festivals and appearances on Ellen?
I think it's very exciting that, the red carpets aren't what they may seem, but I know that Ellen was, life-changing for them. They were very, very excited. And, I think pop culture was always a big part of, especially Nayef,
life because that's where he learned English growing up. You know, they would watch videos and that sort of thing. And American films. And, you know, once he got to the U.S., he was trying, you know, writing the president. He was writing Oprah. He was doing whatever he could to get Batu out. So, like, the opportunity to go on, you know, Ellen was truly once in a lifetime and something I think they were really excited about.
For you as a filmmaker, was this a dream story? Did you, when you first heard of it, did you just know this had to be made?
Yes, but I sort of, you know, Eva Werner, who's the co-director and producer, is the one who first heard of their story as she was working on another project. And so she was the first person to really, like, hear their story cold and knew that it was something that had to be made and really got that ball rolling. I sort of came on, as documentaries do, it took several years to get the funds to make the project, by which time Eva was back in Australia working on her documentary, Chasing Asylum, which I think came out last year, and has made all the waves. And so that's sort of how I came into it. So when I heard about it, yes, I absolutely thought it was like something had to be made. But, you know, I think Eva's the one that really found this, like, story in the woods and realized that, like, you know, this was something special. But of course, I mean, seeing them, they're really two dynamic, unique, and committed people. But as unique as they are, their story is not. And I think that's really part of what makes their story so special, is that, like, here are two really dynamic, committed people whose love helped get them out of there, but there are so many people still living under those circumstances, afraid for their life and afraid to come out, and without the support and love of another person to kind of help get that, you know, get them to safety.
That's Chris McKim, the co-director of the documentary Out of Iraq, one of the great docos and films you'll see starting this Thursday when Melbourne Queer Film Festival rolls into town. And I'll be sitting in a darkened cinema for 10 days. The risks in coming out, it kind of really puts into perspective, I think, you know, we've all been through that time when you like somebody, weren't quite sure whether to say something, make a move, drop hints, whatever. But this puts it in a whole other perspective. As he said, it's nothing to do with embarrassment.
It's about death.
It's potentially about death or imprisonment or violence that, you know, if you make a move on somebody and you've read them wrong, then you are in real trouble. The other thing I was thinking there, Chris was talking almost a bit about how the war has provided, I guess, a bit of protection for them, in that there's so many things happening and therefore they were able to see each other because I guess everybody else was distracted. There were other
things. I guess there was no normal. Like, you're in a war zone and like you said, you know, you're dodging bombs and, you know, your day-to-day is really out there.
And
so
survival. Yeah.
It's survival. And, you know, I guess something like this is reduced to, it's just not important. Or there's just no space for it, you know.
It's probably more about, yeah, I like that, no space for it. That's probably
one of the other things he kept saying was, was that Iraqi soldiers, wanted to know what the American soldiers were like. So people were constantly coming and talking to the translator to
so they
ask.
Had a good cover then.
Yeah.
You know, there was kind of the backstory was there to sort of be hanging around and, you know, it wasn't abnormal. So it kind of had all the right ingredients for it to, I guess, to facilitate their relationship to develop without really drawing any particular attention to it.
But also, does it mean that if our forces go overseas and being LGBT in the forces is okay, does that give a really good role model to other forces which our forces would be working with? So if the Australian army goes to some country where LGBTI rights are, yeah, terrible, like Iraq, would that then normalise, you know, give gay people within their armies more
but
hope?
It's also a difference between the rules that might be available and what happens culturally. So you could have been unlucky and had a homophobic person in the American military who wouldn't let them be together and would cause problems. They were lucky enough to have somebody who recognised what it was and gave them, you know, whatever opportunities he could to spend some time together. So, yeah, it depends on the person, I guess. And the other thing, they're honour killing, so they are still definitely in play. We've often have heard about them more on this show to do with lesbians, same sort of thing, honour killings in a place like Iraq. We've got some more coming up for you from the documentary Out of Iraq. You're on World Wide Wave.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is David Wadali from the Ubuntu Foundation, Malawi, Southern Africa, on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
A few more messages coming in. 317, a great interview. It's a matter of life and death, but for a privileged white male, it's sometimes viewed as a weird fetish when they objectify them as others. Yes, thank you, 317. Any recommendations for films that specifically tackle human rights? Interesting question. So there's a few films that we're in the process of getting interviews for. One, the ones we hope to bring you, there's The Lives of Therese, which is a follow-on from a French documentary that we've actually covered before on this show. If you go to our website, you'll be able to listen to that one, joy.org.au/worldwidewave. It looks at older LGBT people, and this focuses in on Therese, one of those people from the film. A couple out of Korean-themed ones, which is really interesting that we're starting to see some Asian-themed gay cinema, so Weekends and Spa Night. And another one that caught my eye, a couple actually, Real Boy, which is a journey through transition, and Check It, which is all about a tailor's shop in, I think it was New York, who specifically looks after trans clients. So people who are transitioning, changes to their body and how to make them look good and feel comfortable. There's just a lot on. So mqff.com.au is where you'll find the program.
Tonight on the World Wide Wave, we're off to Iraq, and we've been speaking with Chris McKim, the co-director of the documentary Out of Iraq. The passion and determination of Nieff and Batu to survive war and a homophobic culture, then rebuild their life in America, was shared by the filmmakers who wanted to bring their story to the public. We asked the co-director, Chris, how long it took to make the documentary.
You know, it was in starts and stops. I think started probably late 2013, around the time Eva first met up with them. There was some filming at that time. But then it really sat on a shelf for like maybe a year, year and a half as they tried to get the funds to, you know, actually do the documentary. So all told, it was probably 2.5-3 years. You know, I think it was really the waiting game is what took up all the time.
And what do you hope people will take away from the film?
Well, I think it's important that, you know, Nieff and Batu put a very personal stamp on what is a very tricky and kind of Byzantine process, this process of being vetted, become refugees. And, you know, it's one thing to hear about the numbers and the waves of refugees coming across and everything else, but when you can see any story, one personal story, and relate to that and realize that it's like, it's that whole thing of like, you know, we're all the same. And I think the value to this story is that you see how committed two people are, and they're just trying to live their lives, and that's all they want to do, and they're just trying to be happy. They're trying to do the same thing every one of us are. And I think that seeing that and being able to identify a couple of faces in the crowd helps humanize the entire process and hopefully gets people a little more involved and interested and concerned about what's going on.
A human face, indeed, a gay human face to war. Chris McKim, co-director of Out of Iraq, one of the great films at this year's Melbourne Queer Film Festival opening this week. Thanks for joining us from the US on World Wide Wave.
Thank you.
It is indeed one of the ones I'm really looking forward to, actually. I always, when I get the Queer Film Festival program each year, I always look for the ones that are in the daytime. They're usually the gems. You know, you get the big ticket, the brassy ones, usually out of America, that take up the nighttime, you know, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock sessions. But you have a look in the daytime, you'll find some absolute gems.
There you go. You heard it here first on Joy 94.9.
The other thing I loved, and I laughed, because they went on Ellen, and we've actually posted that clip on our Facebook page. So if you go to W3 Joy on Facebook, you can watch them on Ellen. And it was just so cute. So cute. And they named that as, you know, one of their big highlights of being able to meet Ellen and tell their story. They're both now living in Seattle in America and working with LGBTI youth and other LGBTI people trying to escape troubled parts of the Middle East. So they're certainly walking the walk and helping out wherever they can. So really fascinating. It's going to be a great story.
I think the co-director, Chris, there summed it up really succinctly and really well by just saying they're just trying to live their lives. I mean, that's the message, right? Two people fall in love, just trying to do what we're all trying to do. We're just trying to live our lives. Simple.
Yeah, you need to get the story out to people who are not preaching to the converted.
Yeah, that's the problem, right? I don't think the people that need to be hearing the message are going to be going to MQFF.
Well, you know, but they probably will be watching Ellen. So you just never, never know.
You never, never know.
This is World Wide Wave.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, it's Todd Sears, founder of Out Leadership, and excited to be discussing driving LGBTI inclusion on the World Wide Wave.
A big thank you tonight to our guest, Chris McKim, the co-director of the documentary Out in Iraq. It's showing at this year's Melbourne Queer Film Festival, which kicks off this Thursday night. Tickets at mqff.com.au.
And thank you to all the people who message us on Facebook, Paul, Susil, Kathy, Mickey, Enrico, and a heap more who have joined or interacted with us on Facebook in this past week.
And also thanks to those who have messaged us in tonight. We always love hearing from you.
Song to take us out. We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thanks for listening to another podcast of World Wide Wave, the show that takes you around the globe one country at a time. World Wide Wave is the international news and current affairs show on Australia's LGBT radio station, Joy 94.9. You can listen live every Tuesday night from 7 p.m. Eastern Australian Time on 94.9 FM in Melbourne or online at joy.org.au. You'll find all of our podcasts at joy.org.au/worldwidewave. Or follow us on Facebook for the latest international LGBT news. Search W3 Joy on Facebook now.
Great shows, great topics, great radio. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.